From time to time, we entertain some of our friends and some new guests that we've never met to come and talk with us about special times, special holidays in various religions. At Christmas time 2012, we first aired this very special conversation with Rabbi Brad Hirschfield, president of CLOW, the National Jewish Center for Learning and Leadership. You're going to really like this again, I think. Jewish Americans have nowhere to hide from the total immersion, pardon the word, in Christmas that dominates our culture this time of the year. So what can they do?
Well, the first thing I would say is I don't think we have anything to hide from. And I mean that both on a cultural level and also on a spiritual level. What I mean culturally is that one of the things that I truly love about America is that nowhere in the history of the Jewish diaspora over 2,000 years have Jews lived as comfortably, not just alongside, but along with people who are Christian, people who are Muslim, people who are atheist, Buddhist, every possible tradition. And so I would really tell any Jews who feel a need to hide, that impulse to hide is a kind of denial of the magnificent history and present we have had and the future I think we can share, which has nothing to do with diminishing or the weakening of Jewish bonds, but has everything to do with appreciating that our roots can be quite deep and we can still be quite open in this culture. And that for me is a profound blessing.
But Brad, you know, and I know that we Christians at this time of the year can be so single-minded that we are at least a bit, if not a lot, obnoxious. When you get the full dose of Christian music and all of that, and how do they handle that? How do
you tell? There are a couple things. And first of all, I think context counts. I live in New York City. If I lived in Chattanooga, I'd have a different experience and therefore a different response.
Right.
And I do think that's important because it speaks to something, well, and I know that you are careful about and have championed on behalf of others, which is that the larger the majority, the more sensitive that majority needs to be to the needs of minorities. And so in New York, basically, it's all kind of a wash. I'm sure I love Christmas because we're a wash in Hanukkah too. And yet, if I lived in a community in which there were only a few hundred other Jews amongst hundreds of thousands of faithful Christians, it's a different experience. And so I guess my guidance would be, first is I try and remind Jews that while there is no truth in that, in the obvious sense, to the idea that people say, oh, yes, Hanukkah is the Jewish Christmas. No, it's not. But it is. And here's how it is. I think it is no accident that these two traditions, and there are others, I think it's in the core of Kwanzaa and other winter observances as well, promise their members, their believers, their followers, that we can all find the light and the warmth we need, even at the darkest and coldest time of the year, even at the coldest and darkest moments of our life. And so while there are profound differences between celebrating Hanukkah and celebrating Christmas, try and see in others what you love most in your own tradition. And I think on this one, it's not even that much of a stretch. From a burning menorah to a lit-up tree to the promise of a little jar of oil, which is at the core of the Hanukkah story, how the oil lasted longer than anyone expected, to the promise of a largely unknown baby in a manger and people imagining that that baby could and would become the Messiah. And at some level, that doesn't have to be a claim theologically, because imagine if we lived in a world where we came a little bit closer to treating everyone's kid as if they were going to be the Messiah. Imagine what that would mean for issues of child hunger and illiteracy and all the other things that whatever divides us deep down, most people, right, left, religious, secular, Christian, Muslim, Jewish, Buddhist, all know, you know what, we should do better on those things. We can do better on those things, and we must do better on those things. So that would be the first response. And then the other is I ask the Christians, try and invite a little participation from someone who isn't just like you. It's not that you should be less overt in the celebration of Christmas. I actually like that stuff. I like it when people wish me a Merry Christmas, because if that's the language of blessing that's near to their heart, then share it. But make sure you make it okay for someone who's not like you to wish you a happy Hanukkah or a happy Kwanzaa or whatever else they're celebrating. Because for me, we're all at our best not when we cut off or silence parts of who we are, but we make sure that others who aren't like us can be just as present and just as visible as we want to be.
My friend, you know that for many around the world, it's been a year, it's been a tough year, a year that involved loss and suffering. Many have known violence. What are some of the Jewish teachings that are applicable when getting ready for the end of a year like this one?
I think I'll stay close to home in the sense that I'll look at the Hanukkah story. It's this old story, a couple thousand years old. When those Maccabean soldiers went into the temple in Jerusalem, it had been ravaged by war. The menorah, the seven-branched candlestick that lit up the temple, that now we celebrate with eight because it's 8 days, the holiday, and they saw a little bit of oil that wouldn't burn for very long, and they decided they would pour that oil into the candelabrum and light it anyway, even though they couldn't possibly know if it would last. For me, the miracle that the oil burned 8 days didn't begin when the oil burned 8 days. It began when those first soldiers said, you know, let's try. Let's dare to act as if a miracle could happen, and maybe it will. And I think that you combine that with the idea that actually, what if we really believe that each of us is also like that jar? That you and I hope, and certainly everyone listening, we all have more within us, more ability and greater gifts than we often realize about ourselves and almost certainly ever realize about each other. And what if we dared to treat each other like those jars of oil? And I think that that really is what allows us to say, okay, we know if it doesn't work, the truth is it shouldn't have worked anyway. But it's amazing if we're willing to believe that it might and act as if it might, how often it could.
Oh, that's really great. I want to ask you a personal question. What do you like to do on Christmas?
Oh, God, there are a couple things. First of all, I do like to go with my kids and see Christmas lights.
Mm-hmm.
And especially one family that we've been friendly with. The truth is, it's the family we met who in a childbirthing class, and I can't believe 20 years ago. And we became very fast friends from very different backgrounds, very different religious backgrounds. And without even really planning it, an amazing tradition evolved where they would always come one night of Hanukkah and light a menorah and give gifts and get gifts and eat latkes, potato pancakes with us. And my kids would go shopping every year for a tree ornament for their tree.
Hmm.
And it's a funny thing because, right, I'm an Orthodox rabbi whose daughters go shopping for Christmas tree ornaments. And I tell the story because I can honestly say at no time do I ever worry that it will diminish or dilute or confuse my kids. What I think they've actually learned is that when you love who you are really deeply, with real security, with a strong sense of attachment, it will allow you to love who other people are, even though it's not exactly you. I don't imagine any circumstance in which the Hirschfeld house will have a Christmas tree. But I also don't want to live in a world where anyone in the Hirschfeld family can't appreciate a Christmas tree's beauty.
Mm, that's just tremendous. Please tell me that I'm right about this, because all of the Jewish members of the staff of the Interfaith Alliance do two things, and it seems every one of them does it. They go eat Chinese food, and they go to a movie.
Yes, Chinese food in movies are definitely a big deal. There's no, and I have to confess, typically it's a bigger deal the more traditionally Jewish you were raised. I was not raised in a terribly traditional home, so we often had lots of non-Jewish friends and went to Christmas dinners, and my parents were never bothered by that. So, but typically, you're right. I think what happened is, and now we're full circle, where could Jews, especially in a time in America where there wasn't quite as much understanding and affection across traditional lines, where could Jews go to kind of get out of the way of the Christmas onslaught? So you go to a Chinese restaurant, because even if the Chinese people running the restaurant are Christian, they're a different kind of Christian, and who really knows? Chinese don't relate to religion that way, and the food is very different, so the whole thing is like a time out from America. And in a movie, the truth is, the lights go off, and it's all about what's on the screen. And I think there is something to be learned from that, whether you go to have Chinese food or go to a movie, is that to remember whatever's going on, that's not all that's going on. And there are other cultures and there are other things to focus on. And so that's why the third thing I would add is that for a lot of Jews, Christmas becomes a volunteer option, a service option, because there are a lot of people who would like to be home with their families to celebrate Christmas. And if it's not a sacred occasion for you, if you happen not to be Christian, the truth is there's another sacred activity you can engage in. And that's go take over the job slot of that doctor or nurse or firefighter or police officer who would like to be with their family. Or go make sure that you will serve the meals and take care of the people who need to be cared for if their usual caretakers and servers I want to be home with their families on Christmas.
Rabbi Brad Hirschfield is president of CLOW, the National Jewish Center for Learning and Leadership. Brad, as always, it's been a pleasure speaking with you today on State of Belief Radio. It's not just a matter of a good conversation. It's also a matter of great inspiration, and I am grateful to you for that, and wish you a Happy Hanukkah and a Merry Christmas.
I wish you the same, Welton. It's really an honor to be able to talk with you. I mean that from the bottom of my heart. Thank you. Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, and all good things.
That conversation with Rabbi Brad Hirschfield, president of CLOW, the National Jewish Center for Learning and Leadership, first aired on State of Belief in 2012. One of the more memorable moments during the 10 years State of Belief has been on the air. It was one I thought would be the perfect way to end this week's program. Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. If you've made a donation to State of Belief Radio this week, thank you, thank you, thank you. We rely on listener support to keep this show on the air. As the end of the year gets closer, and it's really close now, please consider a tax-deductible contribution to State of Belief and to Interfaith Alliance. If you heard something on this week's show that you think would be helpful to someone you know, friends, acquaintances, please share that news with them. It's very easy to do on Facebook, Twitter, and at stateofbelief.com, and your endorsement of the show can be very important in making them regular listeners of this show like you are. Stateofbelief.com is also where you'll find extended interviews, transcripts, and links mentioned in the show. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. See what he was.